34 minutes after the hour on the USA Radio Daily. I'm your host, Gary Nolan, and Steve Snyder is on board. They pay me because I speak so clearly. 8th Air Force historian. Let me just jump right in here. The 8th Air Force historian and author on board with us today has written a book called Shot Down. It's a true story. Give us a little taste of this, Steve, and welcome to the program.
Well, thanks a lot, Gary. It's nice to be on. I appreciate it. Well, the book recounts the experiences of a 10-man B-17 bomber crew piloted by my dad, Howard Snyder, that was shot down over occupied Belgium on February 8th of 1944. And the book goes into detail about what happened to each member of the crew and about all the Belgian patriots that risked their lives trying to help them. Five of the crew made it back, but five of them did not. Fortunately for me, my dad was one of the five who did make it back.
Wow, that was quite an aircraft. There was one particularly vulnerable position on that aircraft, was there not? Plastic bubble?
Yeah, you're probably referring to the ball turret gunner underneath the belly of the plane.
Yeah.
But actually, that was the safest position on the plane.
Was it really?
Yes, the most dangerous position was up front in the plexiglass nose of the plane where the bombardier sat and behind him the navigator.
Oh, I always thought that the guy that was in that little bubble, the belly of the plane, that he was the most vulnerable because if the plane goes down, could he? Isn't that only accessible from outside the plane, ingress and egress?
There was definitely the most uncomfortable position in the plane because those bombing missions were 6 to 10 hours in length, and the ball turret gunners, you know, just cramped in this fetal position for hours on end. But if you entered the ball through the inside of the plane, and there was a couple occasions where planes came in and they had to crash land, and the belly gunner could not get out of the ball, was not a good outcome.
Yeah, I can only imagine. So your father was a pilot?
Yeah, he was a pilot. His plane was named the Susan Ruth after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas. And after he bailed out of the plane when it was shot down by two German Focke-Wulf fighters, he was missing in action for 7 months, but he evaded capture. He was hidden by many members of the Belgium underground for several months, and then he finally got tired of hiding, so he joined the French resistance and started sabotaging German convoys until Patton's Third Army came up through France after D-Day and liberated that area of Belgium, and then he finally got back to his base in England. So he had quite an adventure.
I had a buddy of mine, he was much older than me, who served in World War II and had the same thing happen to him, and it was the French underground that protected him. But he told me some horrible stories of things they had to do to survive, and I don't know if I could have done it. I really don't know.
Well, that's absolutely certain. The people that hid my dad, or any down there, for that matter, were unbelievably brave people because they risked not only their lives but the lives of their family and friends. Because of the Gestapo, the secret German police found out about it. They'd be arrested, tortured, and either sent to concentration camps or shot. And a few of the people that helped my dad and other members of his crew did meet that fate.
Wow. What courage and conviction.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's hard for people in the U.S. To understand what it was like for the people in those occupied countries like the Netherlands, Belgium, and France. But they suffered through 4 years of Nazi occupation and Nazi oppression. So they really value their freedom because they know what it's like to have it taken away.
Tell me a little bit about the plane itself, a little bit more about the plane. You say the navigator, was it one of the more dangerous positions in the bombardier?
Right, yeah. B-17, it was nicknamed a Flying Fortress because of the armament that they had on the plane. They had 12 to 13 50 caliber machine guns that could put out a tremendous amount of firepower, and also it could take a tremendous amount of battle damage and continue flying. B-17 had a 10-man crew. He had four officers, which were up in the front of the plane, the pilot, my dad, the co-pilot, and then a navigator and a bombardier, and then six enlisted men who were mainly gunners. Typically, the officers were in their early 20s, and the gunners were 18, 19 years old, you know, just out of high school.
Wow. How long did your father train?
Initially he went into because of the first peacetime draft in history implemented by President Roosevelt in the fall of 1940, he went in the Army in 1941, and he was trained as an infantryman up in Seattle or Fort Lewis, Washington for a year. And then he got married, and then Susan Ruth came along, and he didn't think he could support him very well on a private's pay in the Army, so that's why he volunteered for the Air Force. So he went into the Air Force in June of 1942, and then he graduated from advanced pilot training in April of 43. And then after that, he learned how to fly a B-17 four-engine bomber, learned the crew members came together, and then they were assigned overseas to the 306 Bomb Group in Thurlow, England on October 21st of 1943.
Man, what a time that was. What a challenging time. The world at war. And your father flying one of those planes over Europe. Oh, man, that was just such a display of testicular fortitude. So
I'll say there were 26,000 men that died in the 8th Air Force, which is more than the entire Marine Corps fighting in the Pacific.
What was the lifespan? Did they have the lifespan of the average pilot in World War II? Did anybody ever do that?
Yeah, it varied over the course of the air war. In the early years, though, it was brutal in 42 and especially in 43, because at that time they didn't have fighters that could escort the bomber formations deep into Germany and back. And they
In 1943,
they implemented a mission limit of 25, meaning that if a crew member could complete 25 missions, he could go back home. But it was statistically impossible to complete 25 missions. The average number of missions flown in 1943 before being shot down was six.
Good Lord. Six.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right, so your father's flying this thing, and the co-pilot, and they encounter a couple of Nazis, and they get shot up. What was it? The hydraulics, fire? What brought the plane down? Do you know? Did he tell you?
Oh yeah, they got ripped apart pretty good. The ball turret gunner and the radio operator both died in the plane. The other eight men were able to bail out, but the plane was on fire. It was just chaos. Actually, the gunners on my dad's plane shot down the German pilot that got credit for shooting down my dad's plane. They shot each other down, and I found the German pilot who shot down my dad's plane, and I interviewed him for the book, and we became friends.
Wow. How old was he?
Well, he was 20 years old at the time that he shot my dad's plane down. Now, interestingly enough, of all the people that are involved in the shot down story, Hans Berger, the Luftwaffe pilot, is the only one who's still living. He'll be 99 years old this October.
Wow. And did your father have a chance to meet him and talk to him or not?
No, unfortunately not. Because my father died in 2007, and I didn't find Hans until 2013.
I'm sorry that you lost him in 2007. So what did Hans say about the incident? I mean, he couldn't possibly remember every one of those, because they were huge targets. I'm sure he shot down several.
Yeah, he shot down seven B-17s and one Spitfire, but he remembers that. Well, he got shot down three times, and one of those times was when he attacked my dad's plane. So he bailed out, and he could see some of my dad's crew, you know, all bailing out as well and coming down in their parachutes. But he made it through the war. He said it was, you know, unfortunate they had to be shooting at each other, but that was war. He was pretty much just like the U.S. Airman. He was a young guy, 19, 20 years old, trying to defend his country, trying to stay alive.
Yeah, put on a mission and out there doing it. So when they hit the ground, how many missions had your father flown?
Well, he was shot down on his eighth mission. Some of his crew had more missions. Some of them had less missions. They didn't fly they only flew as a full crew twice, because in that bad English weather, guys were getting sick all the time with the flu or pneumonia, and then guys would get hurt or injured on missions, so they'd have replacement crewmen. So that's why, you know, some of my dad's crew had 11, 12 missions. Some only had about five.
They hit the ground. Three of them are already gone, right? The belly gunner, the navigator, and somebody else. Who else?
The belly gunner and the radio operator.
And the radio operator. All right. So are they all, the rest of them all, landing in a relatively close area, or are they spread out by miles?
They were spread out. Actually, the plane and my dad came down in Belgium, and the other guys that bailed out came down in France. It was right at the French-Belgium border. And then different things happened to those guys. Three of them were picked up immediately and became prisoners of war, and two of them were so badly injured they were repatriated back to the United States before the war ended. And then another, the third guy, the flight engineer, he remained a POW for the remainder of the war. And then another one of the tail gunner, he evaded capture too, unlike my dad, who was moved from place to place to place. The tail gunner, Bill Schlenker, he stayed with one family the whole 7 months.
Wow.
And then three other members of the crew, they met up, and they also joined five other down B-17 airmen from three other B-17s. And they were hiding in the woods near Chimay, Belgium, in a little makeshift hut. But unfortunately, a Belgian collaborator ratted them out to the Germans, and the Germans came and captured them, interrogated them, and then shot all eight airmen.
Holy
murdered them. Yeah.
Wow.
So, the book has a lot of, you know, tragedy in it and a lot of triumph as well. So there's a lot of sadness, but there's a lot of happiness as well for five and five.
Did you get a chance to talk to other pilots from World War II that flew similar aircraft or had other experiences? Or is this, is this just a little closer to your dad and his crew?
Oh, I've talked to quite a few. I'm on the board of directors of the 306 Bomb Group Historical Association, and also a board member of the 8th Air Force Historical Society. And I go to air shows all around the United States, signing copies of my book, and I do a lot of speaking and PowerPoint presentations. So I've been fortunate enough over the years that I've met, you know, quite a few men who served in the 8th Air Force. And, there's amazing stories.
Steve's book is called Shot Down. Sounds like a fascinating book, and I'd love to see the details. And the only way I'm going to get those is to read the book. You know, it's fascinating to me. I did some voiceovers for videos for the Cleveland air shows that preceded World War II. And when you look at the state of aircraft just a few years before World War II, how undependable they were, and what kind of courage it required to fly those things. And they would do these air races that would end up in Cleveland, Ohio, and other places around the country too, I'm sure. But to think that they advanced to the point that they could put together a B-17 in that short span of time, pretty amazing when you think about it.
It was a revolutionary aircraft, that's for sure. You know, they thought it would be immune to the German fighters because it could fly so high and fly so fast.
Can you hang on and we'll come back and wrap it up?
Sure.
All right, hang on. Let's get to the bottom of this. We'll wrap it up on the USA Radio Daily. The book is called Shot Down. It is Steve Snyder. He's a 8th Air Force historian and author. He joins us today. The story about his father, his flying fortress being shot down in Europe during World War II, and what he and the crew went through and where they ended up. What a fascinating story about some incredibly brave men. But we were just hitting the break here, and Steve started talking about the aircraft itself, the B-17. They called it the Flying Fortress. They thought it would fly at such an altitude and that it would be safe.
Yes, they could. At the time, he could fly faster. When it was first developed, he could fly faster than any fighter. Prior to the war, when they were first developing it, but then also with all that. Of all those machine guns on board and then flying in these, you know, tight formations of hundreds of bombers, they thought that it didn't need fighter escort at the beginning of the war, but they quickly found out that that wasn't the case. It wasn't until the end of 1944 with the introduction of the P-51 Mustang that the bomber formations finally had adequate fighter support. They could escort them, you know, all the way into deep into Germany to hit targets and then escort them all the way back home to their bases. The P-51 Mustang was really effective. It basically wiped out the Luftwaffe and won the air war. You know, by the time D-Day rolled around on June 6th of 44, the Luftwaffe was pretty ineffective by then.
You know, the interesting thing is that Hitler had invested a great deal of his remaining resources into developing a jet plane, and actually did have, I think, a couple of them.
Yes, they had the ME-262, which was got into production, and it was just too late in the war, though, to make really any impact. And another jet fighter that they tried to perfect was the Henkel HE-162, which actually saved Hans Berger's life, really, because they pulled him out of combat at the beginning of 1945, and he became a test pilot for the Henkel HE-162, which they never really perfected. But he probably would have been killed if he hadn't been pulled out of combat, so that's probably saved his life, why he's still with us.
But those encounters were like, you know, because I was reading an account of a pilot that had come up against those jets, and they were these prop planes were just like taking a covered wagon.
Yeah, the ME-262, it could fly so fast that. Yeah, the American fighters really couldn't do anything about it. Really, the only ones they were able to shoot down are when one of the problems with the 262 was they didn't have that long of a flight time before they had to land again. And so the U.S. fighters would try to pick off these jets when they were either landing or taking off when they were vulnerable.
Unbelievable. World War II, just some of the most courageous brave men in any military anywhere. Your father, one of them, What a terrific story. I can't wait to get my hands on Shot Down. Where can they get it? Is it available at Amazon?
Oh, yeah. The vast majority of people get their books on Amazon. If someone wants an autographed copy, they can go to my website, which is stevesnyderauthor.com. Snyder is S-N-Y-D-E-R. stevesnyderauthor.com, and they can order an autographed copy off my website.
All right.
But it's available as in the print form, you know, paperback, hardcover, all ebook formats. It's available as an audio book. And one thing, nice thing about the print book is that there's over 200 time period photographs, so you can visualize everything that you're reading about.
Wow, unbelievable. Steve, thank you so much for being with us. Can't wait to get my hands on the book, and I wish you the greatest success. And are you touring? I know you go around the country talking. Where are you going next? Any stops lined up?
Well, actually, I'm going to England next.
Well, I'm not going to England to see you, Steve. I'm sorry.
I'm going to go to Thurlow and visit my dad's base. Or actually, it's just a museum there now, the 306 Bomb Group Museum.
Steve,
but I'll be... people can see my schedule on my website.
All right, great. Steve, thank you for being with us. We got to run. Whatever it is in life that you want, go out and get it. Don't wait for the government to drop it in your lap. You make it happen. You seize the day. Carpe diem.